Access number 28673, Mr. Don Mitchard, Reel 9. Now, what did you have any special friends amongst the sergeants, or the...
Yes, I think it's inevitable, isn't it? There was a chap called Sergeant Patterson, I think your name was. Yes, you had made friends. A bit later on, of course, you started to lose them, but at this particular stage that we're talking about, before I actually got into a lot of operational flying, you had friends that you went out drinking with at night. And one of the funny things was, that might be of interest, was at this particular time was when they started bringing in battle dress. Before, it was the same, you know, the old best blue type, because all the short-term commission types, so that's all they wore. And the battle dress came in. There was an instruction from the Air Ministry that, yes, obviously we in the air crew were wearing battle dress because obviously it was better. But we were told we mustn't go out into town at night in battle dress. You must have your best blue on. Which was a bit daft when you think about it, but that was the instruction. Well, I remember one of my particular friends that you're talking about, we wanted to go and do a bit of shopping. So we went into the town in battle dress. And unfortunately, happened upon a couple of service policemen who came along and said, "You realise that you're breaking the rules by being in battle dress. And don't you, Sergeant?" Because we said yes, but we were in a hurry and we had to come. But being typical policemen, they didn't want to know about that. They were going to put us on a charge. So when we got back, we discovered that we had been charged with being improperly dressed. And we were marched up in front of the squadron commander, who I told you was a chap called Archie Winskill. And that was the only time, I have to say, that I've ever been on a charge in the service. And he and I were marched in with our hats off, like in the usual manner. And the warrant officer read the charge out, being in town in battle dress and all the rest of it. The first thing he said, "Number... so-and-so-and-so-and-so, Sergeant, 1313172 I was, Sergeant Mitchard, is that you?" "Yes, sir." And then he read, "Something, something, something, Sergeant, I think he's called Hughes, is that you?" And he said, "No, sir." So the CEO said, "Why not?" He said, they've got the wrong number." He said, "They put a one on, which they shouldn't have done, because he had remustered from being a ground crew and he got a number which was not in the usual line of air crew, and these two service policemen thought they'd left the one off." And so he said, "No, sir." So he said, "What's the matter then?" He said, that's not my number." So the CEO, who was obviously looking for a reason to chuck the charge out, looked at it and he said, "Oh, well, in that case, that you're both on the same charge sheet. The charge sheet is improperly written out, so the charge is dismissed." So that was it. So I thought that was great, really. But after that, of course, we could go out in battle dress anyway, provided we looked reasonably well turned out.
Now, what about, how did you get on with the officers then, generally? I mean, any particular characters you remember of them? At this stage, early on.
Yes, because a bit later on, there's all sorts of, but I'll talk about that later. Yes, so there was one or two that were great friends. There was one lad that was a duty officer that I got on. He was a great friend of mine, and he came to grief, although he got away with it. In the sea, we used to fly down. If you can imagine the geography, there's the Isle of Arran and the Firth of Forth, and then there's the mainland. And we used to do a lot of our practice flying over the water, for obvious reasons, I suppose. And he had an engine failure, a and he wasn't high enough, and he had to bail out, and he came down in the sea, and but they picked him up and brought him back. He was okay, but that was my first experience, I think, of a casualty. So he was a friend of mine, and I think the rank didn't make any difference. If whatever, you know, we were all in the same boat, if you like. Perhaps that's a bit of a pun, but in the same aeroplane. So we were all great friends together. And of course, you had to be, if you were a good squadron, like any other form of any unit, even in the army, if you didn't get on well together, you weren't going to be very efficient, were you?
Now, what about the ground crew who looked after you?
They were okay as well. In fact, okay, they were great. If ever, you know, they always looked after us almost as if, you know, they were looking after themselves. They wanted to make sure that all the working parts were running properly, that everything was fine and that you were comfortable. And I had, and you had your own ground crew. That would be a flight mechanic and a fitter and the one that did the airframes, yeah. The things like the ones that did radio and all that, they were shared, but you did have those two members of your own crew. And one of my chaps, the fitter, was an ex-professional ballroom dancer. I've forgotten his name now, but he was quite well known, you know. And it didn't seem quite right. He was there with his old greasy old overalls on, and when he was doing his ballroom dancing with all his posh gear on. So but the ground crew, I've got nothing but praise for them. They were excellent, and they all the way through my career, they really looked after us, and they didn't get the praise that they deserve, some of them, I don't think, but they were fine.
Now, how long was it before, you know, I mean, you were training with them, and they were just mainly training, but you were doing these, they were also doing these convoy patrols. When did you fly your first sort of operational missions?
Well, we did start doing that because not only the convoy patrols, of course, but we were on readiness as well. And once the flight commander decided that you were going to be able to cope all right, you were put on readiness, and that would be, you were sitting ready to scramble if needs be. Now, we didn't get scrambled very much up in that part of the world, but we did occasionally, and I can remember my first scramble was, I was flying number two to somebody who was, we were just the two of us scrambled, I think, probably.
Now, what exactly happened to the scramble?
Right. I mean, well, we'd be sitting around in dispersal. We all, when I say dispersal, because we were the various squadrons and flights were dispersed all around the airfield for, you know, anti-bombing reasons. And we'd be sitting there in this room with your head, your May West on, obviously, and your flying gear and everything. Didn't have your parachute on because it's difficult to run with a parachute on. Some people had liked to have their parachutes in the airplane. Some, like myself, I'd rather carry it with me and strap it on quickly before I got in. And you just sit about, and the first thing that would happen would be the telephone would ring, and that would be from headquarters, from operations, saying stand by, probably, because they'd pick something up on the radar. And then if it got to a stage where they wanted to scramble, they'd say red section scramble, and the chap that was sitting manning the telephone would shout scramble, and so everybody would run for it to get out to your airplane, including the ground crew, of course, because they had to start you up. And you'd get in your airplane and switch on, start the engine on up, and taxi out. And as I say, my first scramble, there was only two of us, and I flew as the number two. and we got airborne, and we were told to climb to. I mean, actually, I'm using these code words, which sound a bit sort of a bit funny. Angels, whatever. Angels was height. Scramble Angels 10 or 12 or whatever they wanted you to do. So you had to do a battle climb, of course. That was what we'd been training for. And my first flight, that we were told there was a couple of airplanes, a couple of bandits in the area, and they were vectoring, that was the word, on us, onto them. But then I think they turned and went. So they said, okay, that's finished, they've gone. Returned to base. So back to base. Landing. That was, we used to get occasional, sometimes they were more serious than others, you know, because if the Germans were wanting to attack Glasgow or Edinburgh, somewhere like that. I don't think I ever got as far as firing my guns when I was up there.
Do you remember any of the convoy patrols where you put on one of them?
Yeah.
What were they like?
Well, it was a bit difficult, and we had to be careful because they were always escorted by the Royal Navy, and the Royal Navy didn't very often trust us. You can understand it in a way. And they used to say that you're allowed to fly up and down the convoy, but you mustn't fly over it. And if you put your nose over the convoy, they'd shoot at you. And they did. Being the naval, though, they didn't very often hit you, but they did. So that was one thing we had to be careful of. And some of the convoys at that particular time that I was on was the Yanks were coming over, and they had the big ships, you know, the QE1 rather, and the QE and the Queen Elizabeth, and I've forgotten the names of them. The Normandy was one, wasn't it? And so they were the big ships and escorted by the Royal Navy. So we used to fly out into the Atlantic to pick them up and then escort them in and up the Firth of Forth where I suppose they reckon they could be vulnerable, really. But I don't think they ever lost any ships like that. They did out in the Atlantic, of course. But as I say, the convoy patrols that we did were okay, but we had to be careful because I suppose you couldn't blame the Navy in a way, because the Germans did have a habit of getting hold of captured airplanes and pretending to be us.
So no particular incidents as far as you remember?
No.
Now, how long were you at air? You joined them there, not quite sure, well, really. You joined them in March? Or?
Yeah, something like that. And then we did move around. We used to fly off to various parts of the northeast if there was something happening. But towards the end of the when I got there, I'd been there a while, and I got posted to Malta. Now, this sounds a bit daft. What was happening was in Malta, they were sending out to Malta chaps straight from flying training, and they were taking a bit of a hammering. And so the Air Ministry decided what they would do would be to try and send out a bit more experienced pilots for a while, and then bring them back and change them. And I was told that it was my turn to go, and I thought, oh hell. And the idea, what we were doing was flying off and going out to getting on an aircraft carrier and going out into the Mediterranean and flying off the aircraft carrier, which was a bit of a dicey, tricky thing.
You hadn't practiced it?
Hadn't practiced at all. But you didn't really need to practice to fly off an aircraft carrier. Flying back onto it is another matter, but we didn't have to, hopefully you didn't have to fly back on. But what happened to me was I was getting myself geared up to go, and what happened? I got picked up. I went ill, and I got appendicitis. And I don't know whether you know, but in those days, appendicitis was quite a serious illness, and you had to have an operation, which was quite a serious operation. So I was immediately sent to a hospital where I had the appendicitis operation, and I was out of action for a while because I was in the convalescent home and all the rest of it. And when I came back to the squadron, they had moved on, and so what they did, they posted me to another squadron, which was 72 squadron, which I was pleased about, because 72 is a very famous RAF squadron. And so I was posted to 72 squadron.
Now, when was that?
That was when I came out. This would be, I'd probably gone, probably about September time, something like that.
Now, how long had you spent then with the... So you'd not really been in action with 165. It had just been training and then low-key operational flying.
Yes.
And when had you left them, do you think? August or earlier was this appendicitis?
It was about in August sometime. And I went to the hospital, had this operation. I came back and I was posted to 72 Squadron, who had actually come into air on a rest from 11 Group. So, but then of course, from there, we went on from there to go all over the place and down south. Do you want me to go on to all that?
What was your first impression of 72 Squadron?
Absolutely delighted with them. They were a lovely... The CO was a chap called Bobby Oxpring, who was a well-known Battle of Britain ace. And he was very, very much a pilot's man. He was a mate. And he looked after us absolutely wonderfully. He was both in the air and on the ground, and I can't praise him enough.
How do you spell his name? Bobby?
Oxpring. O-X-S-P-R-I-N-G.
As it sounds. And he was a squadron leader?
Yeah, then. He'd gone through the Battle of Britain. He was one of the peacetime officers, you know. He had taken the squadron over not long before they came up to air. He was in 92 Squadron, I think. But he'd taken over, and on there we had a tremendous number of real characters.
Could you give us some examples?
Yeah, there was a short chap called Sergeant or Warrant Officer Gear. He had a great big moustache, and he was a short chap. And he apparently, his hobby in life was campanology, ringing bells. So he was known as Sexton. He's called Sexton. And he was an absolute character. And the wing commander also had a large moustache. And when they used to meet, they used to stop and look at each other and size up the, you know, stuff. And these were sort of characters. I was saying, you said, have you got any characters? And they were. And we had a chap also in the squadron who was a warrant officer. And his name was Charnock. And his name was Chaz Charnock. He was an old Harrow schoolboy, because he used to wear his Harrow scarf. And he was a wild as a March hare, he really was. And he had got the DFM from his time when he'd been... And he was one of the few people that had officially, apparently, sunk a German minesweeper. He'd attacked it in Flushing Harbour and hit the magazine, and he got it officially, and he got it in his logbook, you know. And he was an absolute character.
In what way was he wild, you know?
Well, mad as a March hare is the way he carried on in life, the way he flew. Excellent pilot, but in fact he had been demoted because as he was a Harrow schoolboy, as you can imagine, he'd come in as an officer, and he had got caught flying underneath the Severn Bridge, which of course was very much a, and he'd been the punishment for that was, if you were an officer, is you got cashiered and then you came back as an NCO, and that's how he'd come back as an NCO because he'd been cashiered and got himself back to warrant officer. So you know, that was what he was like.
Any others in those early days with
72? Yeah, there were. I'm trying to think, you know, I've got to think back. Have we got near the end of the tape? We had another chap that had been cashiered for low flying, and he was a sergeant. Peter Fowler, his name was. We did have at that stage too, a couple of Polish pilots that had come to join us, and they I don't know whether you know, but they are jolly good fighter pilots, the Poles were. Mad as March hares, but because they didn't have a lot to lose, I guess. And when we were practicing dogfights, I remember the CO said to me, well, go up with these two and see how you get on with them. And so I went up with them with another chap, the two of us, practicing dogfights. And they said to us, well, you try and get on our tail. But we couldn't do that because they were just too good. That sticks in my mind, you know. But because of the excellent flyers that they were, and they'd got their attitude was that they didn't care much if they got killed. They were killed because they got chucked out of their homeland, I suppose. And so we had some Poles on the squadron.
Did they fit in well? I mean, were they made well, properly welcome?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, we also had a cowboy from America. I'm trying to think of his name. He had come across and joined the RAF. And he was from New Mexico. And he was a good pilot as well. But he, of course, had had the opportunity of joining up with the American, because there was an American Spitfire squadron. But he chose to join up with us. And as I say, he was great. We also had, a Canadian come, but I suppose one shouldn't say too much about this, but the CO didn't particularly like the Canadians. And
why not?
I don't know. I think he must have had some experience in his past that he didn't really be like. And usually if we got a Canadian posted to the squadron, that they found themselves posted on after a short while. Probably unfairly, but he was, I mean, they had a lot of power as a squadron commander, and they had to have it really, didn't they? And I suppose you had to make sure that you had people that got on well together, otherwise, you know, that was...
What were you flying? Which Spitfire was it?
Five.
They said five again.
Yeah, the 5B.
5B.
Mm-hmm.
So any different from the 5 or...?
No, the 5B had the cannon. The 5A had the machine gun only. The 5B had cannon and machine gun, and the 5C had purely the cannon, but most of the airplanes were 5Bs because you had the lot then, because you've got a trigger on the control column for, you could press four different buttons. The top one would be the machine guns only. The middle one was the cannon and machine gun, and the bottom one would be the cannon. But normally, you press the middle one because then you've got your full firepower there. Yep. Also attached to that was a cine camera, which used to record what you were shooting at. And when we practiced, we could, in fact, just had the cine camera so that you could see how well you were doing it, getting on people's tails and things.
And would you actually get the chance to see? I mean, how long was it before you'd see what you'd done? I mean, was it developed on the base or?
Oh yeah, it was. That would be sent because we'd have a intelligence officer attached to the squadron, and he's the one that would sort all that lot out. I mean, he'd probably get those cine cameras run through, and if he thought he ought to tell you something, then he'd tell you. And they were the ones that did all the briefing and debriefing and stuff like that. There was always one of those attached to every squadron.
Now, I presume you had a period of acclimatisation flights. They were resting, basically, were they?
Yes.
And were you acclimatising again?
Yes. Yeah, well, I joined in and doing exactly what they did. And by this time, I was getting more of an experienced Spitfire pilot, you see. Because I'd had some experience before. And so we were at that time a fully operational squadron anyway.
And what was their role while they were at air? I know you're going to move on but what were they doing at air?
Well, the same sort of thing. Same, you know,
it was just
yeah.
exactly the same.
They just replaced the squadron that I did belong to that I'd got detached from because I'd been in hospital. Who had moved back down south, not necessarily to take their place, but they just used to move the squadrons around as it was required, you know. And 72 had been, I think they probably were at Biggin Hill.
Were you aware of the traditions of 72?
Oh, very much so.
Tell us about that a bit. I mean, how did you know? I mean, because, what was your source?
Well, I had read about them in the paper, to be honest, because back in during the war, they didn't used to, if they talked about a particular squadron, they didn't give the number. But they usually had a name, and they were all adopted by some organized something, and we in 72 squadrons had been adapted by Basutoland, you know, which is a little country out in Africa, and we were always known as number 72 in brackets Basutoland squadron. Well, when you read about them in the paper and they said the Basutoland squadron, you see, because that was supposed to be in code that the Germans wouldn't know about. It was absolute rubbish, of course. But so I knew all about number 72 before I joined them. And I knew that they'd had a very good history in the Battle of Britain. So I was quite pleased when I joined them, and I knew that a lot of them were very experienced pilots anyway. So, but there were some like me who were a bit rookie-ish, you know. But how are we doing?